Can I put the recorder on? The audio.
I mean, it's on.
Okay, good.
It's not recording yet.
Is this recording now? All right, Tavosai. Let's begin. Today's daf is Yud Aleph. Kagigo 11. Yes, I think I put an H. All right. So we left off Amar Rava. We actually left off on Yud Amud Beis 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 11 lines up on the bottom. A lot to do today. Amar Rava, lo nitzucha. So let's remember again, we're trying to figure out the Gemara, the Mishnah made a statement that the halakos of Me'ila, of misappropriation of temple property, are like Yeharim Hatluyim Misara, are like mountains suspended by a hair. That there's so much there, but yet again very little in the text. So we're trying to figure out which cases that refers to. Amar Rava, lo nitzucha el lechidisanya. Rava says it refers to the following case. Niskar balabayis lo niskar shaliach. So I will say the Brisa says that if the balabayis remembered and the shliach didn't remember, well, says, what does this mean? Similar case to yesterday. The balabayis sends the shliach with money of hekdish, and what happens? They go buy the sofa, and then the balabayis realizes, oh my gosh, I just sent him with hekdish money. The shliach doesn't realize it. So what is the halacha? Shliach mal. So the halacha is, we actually read this yesterday. The shliach did me'ila. Shliach did me'ila because the balabai essentially canceled the shlichus. Shliach anya ma'ika avid. Aye, but what did the poor shliach do? Hainu karar and tlin v'sar. This is what it means when it says that the laws of me'ilos are like mountains suspended by a hair. Meaning that, again, there are incredible chidushim. Ravashi says, one second, my kushya. That's not such a chidush, that case. Dilma midi dehava amotzi ma'os hekdish l'chulin. That's not all that different than anyone else who goes ahead and takes or uses ma'os hekdish, consecrated funds for chulin. Look at Rashi. Midi hava asha'ar komotzin ma'os hekdish l'chulin b'shogeg. This is no different than any other case. The shliach case is no different than any other case where one accidentally uses consecrated money for mundane purposes. Sheimalu, that you commit me'ila, af ze b'shogeg hotzion, dechevan shabit al mishalech shlichuso, havelei'ihu motzi. So we'll say, interestingly enough, so Ravashi says, I don't understand, Ravashi, your case is not such a chiddush. That case where the shaliach was ma'al is a case of shogeg, is where a case where the shliach accidentally committed the act of me'ila, which we see in other cases as well. It's a shogeg case. El Am Ravashi lo nitzcha el chidisnan. Rather, Ravashi says the chidish of Mi'ila is in the following case. Nutal evino korah shal hekdish. If a person takes a precious stone or a beam of hekdish, or just does that to be a precious stone, a stone or a beam of hekdish, hare zelo mal. A person did not commit Mi'ila. However, nasna lechavero, but if I then went ahead and gave it to my friend, Humal, my friend committed me'ila. Excuse me, Humal, the chaver lo ma'al. I, the person who gave it to my friend, committed me'ila, but my friend did not commit me'ila. So the Gemara says, Nechdi, Mishkal Shakla Mali Hu Mali Chavero. But why is that? Who cares? What does it matter if I took the stone or if I gave it to my friend? At the end of the day, when I take the stone, I take the beam from Hekdish, I should commit me'ila. Why is me'ila only committed when I give it to my friend? Hainu Karan Atluim Bisara. Oh, that's why, that's what we mean when we say that the laws of Mi'ila are like mountains suspended by a hair, because a lot of chidushim, to which the Gemara says, no, umay kushya, what's the chidush of that, what's the question? That case is not such a chidush. Dilma chidush Shmuel, perhaps that case reflects the opinion of Shmuel. What does Shmuel say? Demar Shmuel, hacha, that case is referring to, top of Yud Aleph, begizbar hamusoros lo avne binyan askinan. Rabbi say, what is that case referring to? Remember, the case was where I have, let's say a stone or wood of the Beis HaMikdash, I take it. If I give it to my friend, then I've committed me'ila. If I have not given it to my friend, then I don't commit me'ila. So the truth is, we asked, this seems to be like an incredible chiddush, why don't I commit me'ila automatically when I take it? Why is it only commit me'ila when I give it to my friend? To which the Gemara says, because we're talking about over here, who is this individual? This is the Gizbar. The Bible says, who is the Gizbar? The Gizbar is like the temple treasurer. So what happens? The Chalhecha de Mancha Birshusa de Dei Mancha. This is very interesting. So the Gizbar, because he is responsible ultimately again for what happens within the Beis HaMikdash. Therefore, Lemaisa, it's almost as if the objects of the Beis HaMikdash are considered to be in his Rishus. You only violate Me'ila if you transfer items from a Rishus of sanctity to a Rishus of mundanity. So while it's in the Gizbar's Rishus, that's almost as if what? It's still in the Rishus of the Beis HaMikdash. It's only once he transfers it to his friend that he's committed an act of Me'ila. Elam is Seifa. Rather, again, the case, the Chiddush, must be from the end of that Braisa. What's the case, Braisa? Listen to this. But no, Besoch Beiso, Harez Elamar. Well, say if I take a beam of Hektish and I build it into my home, I have not committed Me'ila ad sheyidor tachteha b'shav epruta, until I live underneath it and I get the benefit of at least a pruta. Says the Gemara, Nechtei, Shinuye Shinia, Shinia, Shinai, Shineo, Ma li dar, Uma li lo dar. So I don't understand. What does that mean? Once I build that board into my home, I should commit Me'ila. What does it matter if I live under it for a shavar pruta worth of benefit, or I don't live underneath it for a shavar? I've changed it by building it into my home. That's Me'ila. To which the Gemara says, oh, haynu kiharar nat pliyim v'sara. This is what we mean when we say that the laws of Me'ila are like mountains suspended by the Rebbe. So remember, you see what's going on over here? Where the Gemara is just trying to find the case that is such an incredible chiddush that we would not have learned from the Pesukim to back up the Mishnah's assertion that there is so much in the laws of Me'ila that is based on Torah Shebal Peh. To which the Gemara says, no, umay kusha, what's your question? Dilma l'chid Rav, perhaps that case is like Rav. What did Rav say? D'amar Rav, kigon shehenicha api aruba. What's the case of all side of the board? The case of the board is where I didn't go ahead and build it into my roof, but rather what did I do? I put it on top of my skylight. I will say, now, skylight is a very optimistic term, right? What does skylight mean? I have a hole in my roof, right? It's all a matter of perspective. All a matter of perspective, right? So I have a quote-unquote skylight, and I decide that I'd like to cover the skylight. So how do I cover the skylight? I put a board on top of it. What I will say, the chiddush over here is, I did not nail the board in, I just simply placed the board on top. So in that case, where I did not build the board into the structure, I'm not an automatic violation of Me'ila by just simply placing the board on top. I only violate Me'ila if I actively derive benefit from it in the value of a Shavar Pruta. How would I actively derive benefit from it in the value of a Shavar Pruta? By living under it. So the Gemara says, Ela li olam kidirava. But rather, let's go back. In reality, the chiddush of the case of Me'ila is the statement of Rava. What did Rava say about say? Rava wanted to say that the chiddush, the case of Me'ila, was the case of where the Bala Bayis sent the Shaliach with Hektish money to purchase an item. Bala Bayis didn't realize it was Hektish. Shliach didn't realize it was Hektish. Then Bala Bayis does realize that it's Hektish before the Shliach does his agency. Cancels the Shlichos, of course, doesn't tell the Shliach this because the Shliach already left. So in that case, again, Rava said that the Bala Bayis did not commit Me'ila and the Shliach did commit Me'ila. To which the Gemara says, and again, Bishogig, because Lamais at the end of the day, as troubling as it sounds, at the end of the day, the Shliach is still the one that used consecrated funds for mundane purposes. Granted, it wasn't for his own mundane purposes, but Lamaise did the act. Udikashi lacha midi dahava amotzi mos hektish lechulin. And the reason now, remember, the reason we shelved Rava's idea in the beginning is because the Gemara said, well, it's not such a chiddush, meaning it's no different than any other case where you go ahead and you use hektish money accidentally, that you're chayiv. To which the Gemara says, I'll tell you why it's different. Hasam midi yada deikazuzi dehektish. In the classic case of where a person accidentally uses some of the hektish money to go ahead and purchase an item, in that case, a person can say like this, I know that I have hektish money in the house and that I have chulin money in the house. And therefore what? And therefore I have to be careful about which money I use. And if I'm not careful and I accidentally use my hektish money, then what? Then what? There is some degree of responsibility there. Granted, it's shogeg, I didn't do it intentionally, but Lamaisa, I should have been more careful. However, again, hacha miyada, but Rabbi said, in the case of the shaliach here, Reuven's doing me a favor by going out and buying the couch for me because I can't go ahead and make it out to the store. He's doing me a favor. Is there any reason for him to suspect that the money that he's being given may what? May in fact be ma'os hektish? I would have said no. Why should it have an expectation? Therefore, I would have said that the halacha is what? That even when it turns out that it was hektish money, that what? That Reuven should not be liable at all. There's no reasonable expectation. To which the Gemara says, Hainu karar natlimisar. You're right. That is what we would have thought, but that is not the halacha. And that is what we mean when we say the laws of Mi'ilo, are like mountains suspended by a hair. That there are incredible chidushim, incredible ideas, but again, incredible ideas that are really based on the oral tradition and we do not find in Torah Shebichsav. Fine. Weiter. Mikram wat valachas merubos. So we'll say then the Mishnah began to Mishnah stated that there are other things that have very few psukim and a lot of halacha. But meaning halachas merubos means many laws, meaning that there's a voluminous amount in the Torah Shavapah. To which the Gemara says, Tana, we learned negoim va'ohalos. When it comes to laws of negoim, so remember negoim is saras. Ohalos refers to the halachos of tumas ohal. The ability for a structure, for a roof to convey tuma. Mikra muat, there are very few psukim associated with these halachas. V'halachas merubos, but there's an incredible amount of law associated with them. Negoim mikra muat, negoim mikra muat, so you just said that there are only a few psukim that deal with saras. Negoim mikra merubahu. Well, so what are you talking about? You have Tazriya Metzora, right? You have virtually two parshios that are dedicated to the halachos of Tzaraas. How can you say that Tzaraas only has a few psukim? By the way, what's interesting about this Mishnah, about this discussion is, if you take a step back and think about it, it's such a fascinating idea. I'll give you a perfect example. So you're right, you have two parashas deal with Tzaraas, and yet, again, how many psukim do you have that deal with tefillin? Right? We have a total of two. A total of two. It's the Pasuk State of Tess. You know, it's an amazing thing. And Tefillin, we go ahead, right? And we perform that mitzvah Mir Tashem every single day. And so we don't even have it anymore. So again, it's just fascinating, just from a legal code perspective, how again there are certain things that have a voluminous amount in the text and not so much in the Torah Shebaal Peh. Other things that are 98% in the Torah Shebaal Peh. 98% Torah Shebaal Peh, very little Torah Shebichsav. So the Gemara just says over here, how can you tell me that Negoim only has a few psukim? It's not true. Amra papachli kamar, that's what it means to say. Negoim mikra meruba v'halachos mu'atos. This is what it means to say. Negoim have a lot of psukim, but only a few halachos. Ohalos, which means Rabbi says, so meaning Negoim has a lot of emphasis in the text, not a lot of emphasis in Torah Shebaal Peh. Ohalos, but halachos of tent tumah, we'll call it, mikra muat, v'halachos merubos, there are very few psukim, but a lot of halachos, a lot of details. Umay nafkamina, the Gemara says, and who cares, right? Meaning, like, this is very interesting that this one has a lot, all right, what does it matter? Listen to this one, it's so amazing. Bless you, what it matters is the following, I mistapka l'chamilsa, because it matters the following, if you have a question, b'negoim, let's say in matters of saras, Ayin Bikroi. Then what? Then you have to know where to go to look. Go to look in Psukim. The imistap kalachamilsa ba ohalos. But if you have a question when it comes to the halachos of ohalos, of tent tumah, then what? Ayin Rimas Nisin. Those sides are very important yisod, that the Jew has to know where to look for your answers. I guess this is before Google, right? Sorry, before you could Google it. So the Gemara says it's important to know because, again, if I know that Negoim has a lot of text, it means if I have a kasha, open the Chumash. I know that Olos doesn't have a lot of text, has a lot of halachas, open up the Mishnah. Dinin, monetary law. So the Gemara says, why do you say that monetary law? There are not a lot of psukim. Michtav kasvinon. Well, say there are a lot. So the monetary laws are written in the Torah. Lo nisrucha el. So we'll say again. Remember, this is quoting over here now. Hadinin ha'avodos hataros v'atmeos v'arayos yesh lahen amash sheyismuchu. Right. It says they have what to rely on. Now we'll say. So the way the Gemara is originally understanding this is that yesh lahen amash sheyismuchu is what is lemaisa again. They have what to rely on, but there's not necessarily a lot of text. So the Gemara says, what are you talking about? Dinin, michtav kasivan. It says it in the Torah. There's a lot of halachos concerning monetary law. Lo nitzricha, ela l'chid Rebbe. Rather, it comes to go ahead, and it's only necessary for the opinion of Rebbe. What did Rebbe say? Desanya, Rebbe Omer, nefesh tachas nefesh. When the Torah says a life for a life, what is the halacha? Mamon. Both say that refers to what? That refers to money. Ata omer mamono ena ela nefesh mamish. Now, how do you know that? Maybe when it says nefesh tachas nefesh, it means a life for a life. And halacha l'maaseh means if you kill, you're automatically killed, and not monetary restitution. So, which the Gemara says ne'emar nesina lamata, v'ne'emar nesina lamala. It says nesina above, and it says Nesina below. Now, Rabbi, look at Rashi for just a moment over here. So Rashi says Nesina lemalo leinyan demei valados ksiv v'nasan biflilim v'nesina lemato v'nasata nefesh tachas nefesh. Rabbi, listen to this. So when it says Nesina lemalo v'nasan biflilim, some of the following situation of where a man harms a hits a pregnant woman, and as a result she miscarries. So the halacha is that he has to pay for essentially, for lack of a better term, the value in the loss. The value in the loss. However we assess that particular value. Pregnant woman, woman who's carrying life, ultimately, again, that life already has halachic value. I don't mean just in that it's alive. I mean actually like a monetary value. So lemaise, again, we pay her. So just like venasan, by the case of where a man causes a woman to miscarry, means financial restitution, so to again, venasata nefesh tachas nefesh, that nasan, gzersha nasan, also means what? Monetary restitution. Just like by the case of the miscarriage, it means you have to pay her money. So too over here, by the case of where you take a life, you also have to pay money. Fine. Avodos. So we'll say again, Mishnah seemed to say that the laws of sacrificial service, there's not so much written about it. What are you talking about? Michtav Kasivan. It's explicitly written in this. So we'll say again, this is so striking because there is so much. In fact, again, let's be honest, one of the most sometimes frustrating things for us without the Beis HaMikdash now is how much time the Torah spends on sacrificial service, because again, we don't even know what to do with it. They have a whole Sefer Vayikra. So how can you say it's not written? To which the Gemara says, no. The Gemara says, Lo nitzricha ela l'shir mikvah. Lo nitzricha ela l'holachas hadam. What is it referring to? It means that the Torah does not explicitly say, Rabosai, that the avoda of holacha. Holacha means what? Remember, the first step in the karban is shchita. Now, happy shchita is ksher bizar. You don't need a coin to do the shchita. Even the Yisrael can do the shchita. So let's say whoever does the shchita, the first real step of avoda that requires a coin is what? Is kabbalah sadam. Remember, again, the coin, the animal is shechted, and the coin catches the blood as it's spurting out in a klisharis, in a receptacle. Now, what the Gemara says is the next step, Rabosa, is what we call holacha sadam. Holacha sadam means what? The actual carrying, the taking of the blood to the Mizbeach. Remember again from our Yuma days? So remember again that picture of the Beis HaMikdash, that you had the outer Mizbeach, and behind the outer Mizbeach were the rings. Those rings is where they shechted animals. We don't have to use the rings, but the rings are very handy. So remember again, he shechted the animals in the rings. And the Maisa again, he would then take the blood over to the Mizbeach. So interesting, the Gemara says over here that Holacha, the avoda of Holacha, of taking the blood, is not written in the Torah. It's not written. So the Gemara says, Desanya, Vihikrivo, when the Pasuk says, you shall bring the blood close to the Mizbeach, Zukabala Sadam, Rabosai. That refers to what? That refers ultimately again to the receiving of the blood. Va'afka rachmana b'lashon halacha. And yet again, the Torah phrases that in the lashon of walking. Because remember, we'll say what? V'hikrivo means what? You shall bring it close. Now, what's interesting over here, if that pasuk says, V'shachatas ben abakar lefnei Hashem, V'hikrivo b'nei aron ha'kohanim es adam. Now, V'hikrivo literally means what? It literally means he will bring it close. Now, what that is actually referring to is what we call Kabbalah, the receiving of the blood. But the way it phrases the receiving of the blood is what? That you shall receive it and bring it close, which includes what? The avoda of holacha, the avoda of taking the actual blood itself. So afkarachmana balashon holacha, dechsiv, vehikriva koin esakol, bikter mizbeacha. Amar Mar, and we learn, zu holachas evarim lekevesh. This ultimately, again, means the taking of the limbs over to the ramp. So the memra, the holacha, lo sifka mechlal kavala, teaches us that we do not exclude the avoda of holacha, of actually taking the blood, from the avoda of kabbalah. So we'll say the point that I was making over here is that lemaisa, the chiddush of avodos that is not recorded explicitly in the Torah is the avoda of holacha, the avoda of actually taking the blood from the area where you shechted the animal, ultimately again to the mizbeach. Rabbi, so you'll say to yourself, well, isn't that obvious? Of course you have to take the blood. Remember, that's not what we're saying. We know you have to take the blood. What's the chiddush? What's that it's an avoda. And if it's avoda, it must be done by a kohen, meaning I would have said, I have to get the blood to the Mizbeach, but perhaps Yisrael could do that. Kamash Mala, no, that's an avoda as well. Weiter.
Once we interpret the kriva to mean
so the Gemara just says, I don't know. The Gemara says that the fact that the Torah goes ahead and phrases the avoda of Kabbalah with the lashon of v'hikrivo just is coming to include something else. The Torah, so therefore, the way the Gemara phrases it is teaching you do not exclude the malacha or not malacha, the avoda of Kabbalah. Holacha. Thank you from Kabbalah from v'hikrivo. So the Gemara goes like Tmeos. So we'll say again. The next thing was the laws are ritual impurity. I'm sorry. Taros. I'm just so excited to get to the Tmeos. All right. So Taros. So we'll say so again. So the Mishnah said that halacha lemaisa again that there is not so much written about the laws of ritual purity. So the Gemara says really michtav kasiva. What are you talking about? There is so much written about the laws of ritual purity. Ross says very interesting. Nitzchah el l'shir mikvah. This is very interesting. Rather, what does it come to teach me? The Mishnah is telling me there's one very important thing that's not recorded in the text, and that's what Rabbi say. How large a mikvah has to be. The lok siva, because Rabbi says the shear for a mikvah is not written. Disanya, v'rachatz es bisara b'mayim. You have to go ahead and wash your flesh, literally in water. B'may mikvah. That refers to Rabbi say, we know that b'mayim over here doesn't just mean any water. The Gemara learns out that it means ultimately, again, in a mikvah. Es kol bisaro. But again, interesting enough, it doesn't say you have to just wash your flesh. Rather, it says what? You have to wash your entire body. So what does that mean? Mayim shekol gufa ole bahen. This means that what? It has to be enough water that what? That could cover your entire body. The kamahein. And how much water does an average-sized person need in order to go ahead and cover their entire body? Ama al ama berum shalosh amos. It means you need one ama by one ama with a height of 3 amos. And I will say, how much is that? Fishiru chachamim me mikvah arba'im sa'a. And the rabbis gauge that amount is the amount that we call 40 sa'a. I will say, we'll actually discuss in a little bit exactly how much that is. But 40 sa'a. So we'll say, the point that I was making over here is that lamaisa, this very important detail, right? We speak about a mikvah all the time. And the mikvah is the only portal, the only gateway for tara that we have in halacha. And yet what? And yet what? The shear, what constitutes a mikvah is not written explicitly in the Torah. Therefore, again, the Gemara says, this is what it means when it says that the laws of taros are not recorded. Tmeos, the laws of ritual impurity, or I should say impurity. Michtav kasiv, the Gemara says, what are you talking about? It is written in the text. Lo nitzcha el chadosh min asharis. Oh, you know what it's coming to talk about? It's coming to talk about if you have a lentil-sized piece of a sheretz. So I'll say that a lentil-sized piece of a sheretz conveys to me. I will say the assumption is, again, obviously I will say if you have a sheretz that is whole, even if it's smaller than a lentil, it could go ahead and convey tumah, right? The idea, because that's called the beria. That's called an entire entity. However, the Gemara is suggesting over here is that the chiddush is that if I have a larger sheretz, but all I have left is just a lentil-sized piece of that sheretz, that lentil-sized piece conveys tumah. The lo ksiva, because that's not written in the Torah, the sanya, bohem, the pasuk says the following. I'm trying to find it in here. Eila hatmeim lachem b'chol sheretz kol hanogeya bahem b'mosam. Whoever touches them when they are dead becomes tameh. So the Gemara says, yochol b'kulon. I might have thought that halacha l'maisa you only become tameh if you touch the sheretz when it's totally intact. Talmud lomar bahem. Therefore the pasuk says, Talmud lomar mehem. Therefore the pasuk says, from them. And that would indicate what? That l'maisa, even if there's only a piece of the sheretz, yochol miktsasam, so I might have thought, therefore I should become tameh even if I just touch a piece of a sheretz. Talmud lomar bahem. Therefore the pasuk says, only with them or in them, which would seem to indicate what? Whole sheretz. So we'll say, interesting way of contradictory inferences. Bahem seems to indicate that it's only a whole sheretz that makes me tameh. Mehem seems to indicate to me that it's only a partial sheretz. So which one is it? Haketzad. Ad shiagir b'miktsaso shehu kakulo. It means you have to touch a piece of a sheretz. You have to touch a piece of a sheretz that is as significant as a whole sheretz. So how much of a chunk of a sheretz do you need? That it should be as significant as the whole? The Gemara says, Shira Chachamim b'chadasha. So the Chachamim went ahead and said, it's the size of a lentil. So if you have a lentil-sized piece of sheretz and you touch that, lemais again, you will become tamei. Now, where do we get that from? Shekin chumat, tchilasok b'chadash. Because we'll say chumat. Now, chumat is one of the shratzim that are mentioned in Torah. We don't know exactly what a chumat is. What? Oh, a hamet. Okay, good. Thank you. Right. So, I mean, Rashi is over here. Omer ani shumin sheret shekorin limga. Limga hagolda beklipa haoleches umaageles tamid kol kama shegadot chasanis. Okay, whatever it is. I'm sorry? A lizard, a snail. Good, wonderful. Wonderful. Google it, right? Right, good. So, right. Good. So they both say the idea over here is now the idea over here is that remember this sheretz may actually grow larger, but when it starts out ultimately again as this small adasha. So the Gemara goes right now. Both said the lizard comes here. Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Kizanav Halta. Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Yehuda says like the tail of a lizard. So the tail of a lizard again is apparently again the size of an adasha, the size of a lentil, and therefore the Maisa again that's significant enough to count as a unit of sheretz, and therefore if you touch it, you become tamei. So let's say the chiddush over here is remember this is not written. This is not written in the Torah, but Lamaisa again, it's the halacha. Let's go weiter.
Are bugs considered to be a sheretz, or does that be an animal when the Torah classifies as sheretz?
So generally anything that crawls on the ground is considered to be a sheretz.
Like
a spider could be a sheretz, yes. Correct. Spider could anything. I'm sorry? So spider is right. Anything that does not fly. Ultimately, although there is a sheretz ha'of also, but right now they're talking about just shrotim that crawl on the ground. So tomorrow is weiter. Arayos. So we'll say, Michtav Kasvina. So why do you say that Arayos? Why do you say that the laws of immorality are not written? Michtav Kasvina, that's not true. Right, we'll say again, it's coming up, it's right, we're going to read it. Emirat Hashem, you know, B'sha'a Tovan Yom Kippur. So what do you mean it's not written? It is written. Michtav Kasvina. No, it's not written because the following case is not written. This is actually interesting. We'll say, Lebito me anasuso. Let's say, again, a man violates a woman, she becomes pregnant, she has a daughter, and he violates that daughter. He violates, oh, he's right. He violates that daughter. I will say again, the point over here is, lemaisa, now again, obviously, the prohibition against incest is obviously stated in the Torah, but this particular case, where lemaisa, again, the child itself was born from a maisa iser, so the Torah doesn't immediately address this case. The loksiva, it's not written. Damarava, amrli rabbi yitzchak paravdimi, asya, heina, Asya zima. That's also we make a gzir shava of heina and zima. If you look at Rashi, Amurava Amuli Rabbi Yitzchak Paravdimi Asya heina leisura. So we'll say make a gzir shava of heina to teach me that this union would be absolutely prohibited. Union is the wrong word, but that this violation would be absolutely prohibited. So that's heina. And asya zima lesreifa. And Abba says zima teaches me that the man who would do this ultimately again would be put to death by sreifa. So Abba says that's the case. So the Gemara is pointing out, yes, the laws of arayos are written, but there are certain cases of arayos that are not explicitly stated that we learn out their prohibition through a gzeres shava. Okay, weiter hein gufei Torah. So Abba says, remember again, it's actually interesting. So the way the Mishnah ended off is the Mishnah said that these halachos of dinin, monetary law, avoda, sacrificial law, ritual purity, ritual impurity, immorality, hein gufei Torah. These are the pillars. This is the essence of Torah. So Gemara says, hani in hanachlo. What does that mean? It's only these areas of halacha or these areas that are the Torah, and what is everything else? Ema hein vehein gufei Torah. Rather, you have to read the Mishnah differently. The Mishnah says these and those are the essence of Torah, meaning everything we listed in the Mishnah. There are some things that are written in the text, there are some things that are not written in the text, there are some things that only have a reference in the text, have a luminous amount in the Torah Shabbat Peh, and there are other things that are what? That are referenced heavily in the Torah and very little in the Torah Shabbat Peh. And how does the Mishnah end? Hein vehein divrei Torah. Both these and those ultimately are all part of Torah. Hadron Allah hakol chayavin, mazel tov. In darshan ba'arayos b'shlosha. We'll say now we get into an interesting discussion. You are not supposed to teach the laws of immorality, bishlosha. We'll say, now what does it mean with a group of three? Now the way Rashi understands right now group of three is shnayim vahu. That means two people and the teacher. We're going to see, by the way, that it's actually not like that. We're going to see that three actually means, well, we'll see an opinion, at least it says that three means that I, the teacher, shouldn't teach the laws of arayos to a group of three. Which the Gemara is saying is that arayos should be taught only in much smaller groups, for reasons we'll see. You shouldn't go ahead and teach the creation story b'shnayim with two people. With two people. Now again, Rashi says echad v'hu. Rashi says two means the teacher and one student. But we'll see again, there are other opinions that say that it means the teacher and two students. And we'll explain why this is. V'lo b'merkava, you shouldn't go ahead and learn the ma'aseh merkava b'yachid. You shouldn't even learn the ma'aseh merkava by yourself. Unless, of course, you are exceptionally wise and you understand these things. I will say, what is the Ma'aseh Merkava? So Ma'aseh Merkava, you know, means, so some say, again, sometimes it refers to the prophetic vision of Yechezkel, where Yechezkel sees some type of prophetic vision that refers to the Messianic era. But the truth is, Ma'aseh Merkava is often used as a generic term for exceptionally esoteric areas of Torah. Today, what we would call Kabbalah. So again, we're going to get into the Gemara what Ma'aseh Merkava is. I mean, we're not going to learn it, but we're going to get into what Ma'aseh Merkava is. But I want to point out to you, again, in a limited fashion, it's the vision of Yechezkel. In a more expanded fashion, it has to do with the most esoteric areas of Torah, Kabbalah, Zohar, things like that. Oh, even though, again, I will say, obviously, the Gemara is not talking about Kabbalah and Zohar. The Kabbalah and Zohar were codified again as books of knowledge later on, but that knowledge existed. All that happened with the Kabbalah is Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai codified that knowledge. He codified, meaning that his students, they put it together. But that knowledge was already in existence. Okay, so therefore, again, don't get into Ma'aseh Merkava unless, of course, you really know what you're doing. B'yachid means alone. Correct. Ain sham elohu levado. Correct. By myself. Correct. Unless, of course, I'm a Talmud Chacham and I can handle it. And we'll say, whoever looks at four things, it would have been better had he not been born. What does that mean? He looks at malamala, what's above, malamata, what's below, malifnim umala achor, what is before and what is afterwards. I will say, if you look at Rashi says over here, what does this mean? Malamala. What is above the angelic hosts? I tried to figure out what is in Shamayim. Malamata, and what is below the angelic hosts? Still referring to the celestial sphere. So a person who spends time trying to figure out what's in the celestial sphere. Ma lifnim, chutz l'mechisar kilim mizrach, what is beyond the eastern horizon? Umala achor, and what is behind the western horizon? So according to Rashi, one who spends his time trying to figure these things out, which you will never figure out, literally it is better as if you've never been born. Now we'll have to discuss, why do you use such a strong lashon like that? You know, you could say, don't waste your time on it, because you're not going to put your time into more constructive things, but to say it's better as if you've never been born, pretty strong lashon, so we'll see in the Gemara what that means. If you look, by the way, interesting enough, if you look at Tosfos, so Tosfos points out over here, it's on the right-hand side, Yochol Yisha Malamala Malamata, Tosfos about four lines in, Ve'ilu lekamon beferush mashma, mashah kodim shenivra olam umashi yihiyel acharkach. The way that Tosfos, also someone will explain, Malamala Malamata Malafni Mala Achor, means what was here before the world and what will be here when the world ends. So a person who spends his time trying to figure those things out is not going to have much success, and therefore the Mishnah says better to have for him never to have been born. Now we'll still discuss why you have to use such a strong lashon. V'chol shelo chas al kavod kano, and whoever is not careful with the kavod of God, rasui lo shelo bali olam, it would have been better had he not been created. So we'll say again, we'll see exactly what that means in the Gemara as well. Amrit. Now it's interesting, by the way, this lashon of rasui, right? That rasui means like ra'ui. We'll see also why the Mishnah uses that lashon. Amrit bereishis lo merkav biyachid. So the Gemara says like this: you told me that even an individual should not learn ma'aseh merkava. V'hadar amrit ela imkein uchachal mevin midaitos. So we'll say the Gemara says that Mishnah, you, there's an inherent contradiction. On one hand, you said that even a yachid shouldn't study ma'aseh merkava, and then you said what? But if the yachid is very smart, talmud chacham, you can study ma'aseh merkava. What does that mean? Hachikam. That's what it means to say. Ain darshin ba'arayos l'shlosha. You should not teach arayos to a group of three. And you should not teach Maaseh Bereishis, creation story, to two. We'll discuss why. And you should not teach the Maaseh Merkava even to what? Even to another individual. However, Elo, Imkin Hayachachem, even Midaito. But if you are a Talmid Chacham and you understand these things, then what Rabbi say? You are permitted to go ahead and learn them yourself. Ein Darshan Barasa Shlosha. So we'll say, now we're going to dissect each of these things. You can't go ahead. You should not teach. Arayos Tunabas, remember again, according to Rashi, Bishlosha means within a group of three, and you, the teacher, are included. We'll see according to the Gemara what it's also going to mean is what? That I can't teach, if I'm the teacher, I can't teach it to a group of three. So the Gemara says, my time, but why not? Why can't I teach? Why can't you learn or teach Arayos to a group of three? Ilay Mishum Dichsiv, Ish Ish, El Kol She'er Saro. Maybe you'll say like this, Torah says, Ish Ish. Ish ish trei, ish ish means two. She'er b'saro is chad, represents another. Va'am rachmano lo sikrivu l'galos erva. We'll say, it's a very interesting drasha. So the pause says, ish ish lo sikrivu l'galos erva. So ish ish, ish is one, ish is two, lo sikrivu. El kol she'er b'saro is one, means three. You should not come close l'galos erva. So the Gemara is interpreting is, three people should not come close to what? To uncover the deeper meanings, or to uncover, or to learn the halachos of arayos. Okay, elamiata. But if you're going to make that drasha, which Rabbos, you have to admit, is a strange drasha, just from the outset. But if you're going to take that logic, elamiata dechsev ish ish ki kalal alakav. If that, if you're going to say that when a man curses God, ish ish, or asher yitim izar lemolech, or a person goes ahead and what? Gives his children over to Molech. Hachanami, would you say that the only time you're chayef for cursing God is if you do it in a group of two? Or the only time you're chayef for giving over your children to Molech is if you do it in a group of two? Ish ish never means two people. Ish ish means what? Ish ish always means an individual. It's just, again, that's the way the Torah speaks. Ela hanomi boile. Rabbi say, no, in those cases, ish ish is necessary for something else. What does it come to teach us? The rabbos es hanochrin. It comes to include Gentiles. Shemusharn al birchas Hashem va'al avodah zarah ki Yisrael. That non-Jews are obligated or are prohibited from engaging in idolatry and from cursing God in the same way like a Jew is. Hay nami mi boile. The rabbos says hanochrin shemusharn al arayos. So Rabbi say, you could say al ki Yisrael. You could say the same thing over here. That why does it say ish ish by immorality? To teach me that Gentiles are also bound by a code of morality, just as Jews are. Which Rabbi Sabino, one of the Shemites that's been in Noach, one of the seven Noachai laws, is that non-Jews have to have a code of morality as well. Elam idichsiv, rather, how do we know that a group of three should not learn arayos? Elam idichsiv, ushmartim es mishmarti. You shall literally guard my guardings. Mishmartim trei, shmartim means plural, you shall guard. Mishmarti is chad, my guarding is singular. V'am rachmana levilti asos michukos atoivos, in order that you not go ahead and engage in those abominations. So the Gemara is understanding over here that it's not just simply a prohibition to go ahead and engage in the abominations, but rather the Torah is also conveying to us that what? That you should not learn about these abominations within a group of three. But again, if you use that logic, so does that mean that every single time you see this plural, that the obligation is only in a group? So you only have to keep Shabbos if it's two people, or you only have to eat Matzah if it's only two people, or you only have to go ahead and safeguard Kodesh if it's two people? That can't be. Ella Amr Vashi, also listen to this. So we're going to scrap everything we said before. My ain darshan baras shlosha. What does it mean when we say that you can't darshan, that you should not learn arayos within a group of three? Ain darshan besisre arayos b'shlosha. We'll say it means that you do not try to delve into sisri arayos. I will say sisri arayos literally means the hidden aspects of arayos. What does it mean? Look at Rashi. Sisri arayos, third wide line down in Rashi. She'inan mifurashos. The parts of arayos that are not explicit in the Torah. Kigon, bitom anasos. So like the case you just saw before, I will say that a daughter from a woman who a man violated. Ve'em chamav, the mother of your mother-in-law. The Eim Chamo, so the mother of your father-in-law, did nafki m'sechah sanhedrin midrasha. Supposedly, what the Gemara is saying over here is like this: that you should not, you can't study complicated, non-explicit laws of immorality with a group of three. Why not? My timer. So I'll say again, what the Gemara is saying over here is like this: anything that's written explicitly in the Torah that is obvious from the text, so you could study in a group of three. It's only the things that are not explicit that require a little bit more comprehension that you can't study in a group of three. Why not? My time, listen to this. Svarbo, so this is amazing. Beit Shrei, listen to this, and this is also amazing from an educational perspective. Beit Shrei, because if you are learning with a group of two students, remember the Gemara also is understanding over here that three really means what? A teacher, and three students. So if you're learning with two students, Beit Shrei, Ki Yasvi Kamei Rabbayhu, when two students sit before their Rebbe, Chad Shakil Vitari Bahadi Rebbe. So I'll say, when one student is talking with the Rebbe, right, talking and learning with the Rebbe, then what? V'idach, Masli Udne Ligimara. So we'll say what happens if you have two students. So when one is conversing with the Rebbe, what is the other student doing? He's listening. He's listening to the conversation, right? He tells us he might not be verbally active, but he is listening to the conversation. However, again, Tlasa, but we'll say if you have three students, then what happens? Chad Shakavatari. When one student is talking with the Rebbe, then what happens? Right, Badi Rabbe, Vahanach Tre Shaklu Vitari Bahadi Hadadi. What are the other two students doing? Right? It's amazing. Things don't change, right? They will say, let's even say they're learning. They're learning. But you know what? They're not learning what the Rebbe's learning, right? They're learning something else. Velo yadi my kamra bayon. What's going to happen? They're going to end up missing out on what their Rebbe is saying. Va'asu lemishrei isura ba'arayos. And what's going to happen? They're going to end up permitting something in arayos. So both say, what the Gemara is saying over here is that lemaisa, again, arayos is such a sensitive area that we want to make sure that the students are attentive to everything. And therefore, again, you could only teach it in a smaller group. This is, again, for the non-explicit laws of arayos, so that we're sure the students get every single piece of information, because we are concern that if you are teaching non-explicit laws of arayos, very specific, non-detailed laws, that if it's a group of three, someone's going to end up missing the details. And I will say again, obviously, if you end up missing the details, lemais, again, you can make some pretty serious and significant mistakes. Ihachi, kola torah nami. I will say, so if that's the case, why is this only by arayos? Why don't I say by Hilchos Shabbos? Right? So I shouldn't teach Hilchos Shabbos to a group of three students, because again, when I'm talking to Reuven, Shimon and Levi are going to be doing something else, and they're going to miss out on something. Let's listen to this. Arayos shiny. Right? Arayos is different. Why? To Amar Mar, Gezel va'arayos, nafsho mechamdason u'misadon. There are two things that man desires at all times, and that is theft and immorality. Theft and immorality. Ihachi gezel nami. So we'll say again, if that's the case, then why don't we say the same thing about the laws of theft? I mean, I'll both say what it's saying when a person desires theft is that it does, lav dafka means that a person always wants to steal something from someone else. What that means is a person always lives with desires to acquire things. That's just the nature of material man. He always wants more. So because he always wants more, he always runs the risk of engaging in theft. That theft is something that we have to be so careful with, since man has such an innate material desire. So if that's the case, again, the Gemara says, so why don't you say by Gezel also, that a Rebbe should only teach the laws of theft to two students or less? So we'll say, this is amazing. Arayos, bein befanav, bein shelo befanav. Nafish Yitzrei. Rabbi say, Gezel, Befanav Nafish Yitzrei, Shlom Befanav Lo Nafish Yitzrei. So let's go backwards. When it comes to Gezel, so what does it mean? A person may have a constant desire for Gezel, but the truth is that desire is only awoken when? When Lemaise, again, something is in front of me, right? I see that my neighbor drove up in a nice, beautiful new car. Say, wow, that is beautiful. So when something is in front of me, that awakens that desire. You know what the amazing part about Arayos is? That Rabbi Osai, again, a person has a desire for Arayos all the time. Sometimes a person is aware of it, sometimes a person is not aware of it, but that fire burns constantly. Sometimes it's stoked, it's provoked a little bit, perhaps when I see something, when I encounter something, but Lamaisa, it's always there. Because, so I'll say, see, here's what's amazing. Because it's always there, what's going to happen? If the Talmud hears something incorrectly in the shir, what's the concern? The concern is, you're never going to believe what I learned today, right? You never, right? Listen to this. This is mutter. But it's not mutter. It's not mutter, right? You just weren't paying attention. You were talking with Shimon when the Rebbe was talking with Reuven. So it's not mutter. So because it's also such an incredible idea and it's an insight into human psychology, that there are certain things we really want to do in life. All we're looking for is what? Right, is a heter, right? All we are looking for is a license. And the amazing part is that sometimes you're able to hear that license, even when what? Even when it was not actually stated. So because a person has a natural, innate, burning desire for arayos, The concern is they're almost waiting to hear something permissive. And again, the Rebbe's not going to say anything permissive, but because they're not paying attention, they may hear something or not hear something, which they may translate as a license, as a permission. And therefore, again, the Mishnah says, you may not teach the laws of Arayos into anything more than a group of two. So both say, halacha l'maisa, what comes out, I just want to be clear, we really have to stop. What comes out is that l'maisa, is that, remember, again, this is only with the law, non-explicit arayos. With explicit arayos that exist in the text, that we're not worried that somebody's going to misunderstand something because they're written. Therefore, that would appear that you could teach it even to a larger group. It's only for the non-explicit items that one has to make sure to only teach to a group of two or less. All right, the boss, we'll stop over here.